The Plucky Haggis, Tuesday 31st of August 2010. Welcome back to Harvest and Fermentation Part 2 of 3. Brewing your own is all very confusing, at least that's what I've discovered among the countless methods and systems in use. Barring a few common and basic housekeeping rules with regard to cleanliness, basic ingredients and equipment, I thought this was going to be. Sterilisation is key to ensuring your creation isn't inadvertently affected by stray yeasts, bacteria and fungi. After all, the last thing we want is having to throw out hard-earned results just because it's gone bad, sour, or something you should be pickling onions in. Ingredients can be fruit, vegetables, even foliage, sugar and yeast, all in infinitely variable quantities depending on personal choice and plant matter. Basic tools include a food-grade brewing tub for the mash, plant material and liquid, which may include natural yeast. Here, the must, juice of fresh fruit, is produced prior to fermentation by various means, such as trampling underfoot, bashing with a variety of implements, or pressing. The must is then racked, moved or filtered to you and me, to another tub, or carboy, for the primary fermentation process. Following successful fermentation, the brew is then racked, siphoned into airlocked vats or 5-litre receptacles known as demijohns. Here it's left to complete its secondary, occasionally third, fermentation process. Latterly, finnings are often used at the end of this process to encourage further clarification prior to bottling. Then your treasured handiwork is finally, hopefully considerably less cloudy, containing the desired sweetness and alcohol content. Some brews can be drunk immediately. Others require months before being drinkable, let alone mature. Connoisseurs and others perfecting their art may leave their brews for years to develop a complex body, often being stored for long periods in spirit-soaked barrels, aging gracefully in cool, darkened cellars. Revered vintners indeed. This is just a summarised reflection of what I've come to understand and appreciate. There are those who irk at the process and others who probably overcomplicate it, just because that's what they've come to trust and rely on. Somewhere between the two, I hope to conjure up something drinkable, i.e. not vinegar or sour and certainly not poisonous. With 35 pounds of pears ripening more quickly than I can eat, being as I'm no longer able to share the bulk of my crop with dozens of appreciative colleagues due to redundancy, I need to justify my tree's arduous production, not to mention beneficial winter pruning and injuries recently sustained picking them. Payback. Upon reaching peak ripeness, I mashed the fruit, then squeezed the pulp through a linen tea towel, much more work than I'd imagined, but I eventually recovered 5 litres of pear juice, or must. To this I added 300 grams of sugar per litre, dissolving it within the before adding a teaspoon of champagne yeast and another of yeast accelerator and clearing agent. That will get the party started, fizzing, brewing. This yeast is now happily going about its business, consuming as much sugar as it can, converting it into alcohol under the cover of pin-pricked cling film, pierced to let the gas escape and keep other organisms out. In the morning I added 5 litres of water and helped it back into vigour by placing my pail, a make-do carboy, in warm water. The preferred temperature for the active part of the process appears to be between 71 and 78 degrees Fahrenheit. Ideally 21-22 degrees Celsius, so a thermometer comes in handy. Likewise, a warmish area to store it, such as an airing cupboard or warm conservatory. Another useful just acquired, free of charge and a few damsons, is a hydrometer indicating specific gravity, by which you can then measure, calculate sugar and alcohol content before and after yeast activation. Lost you? Bored you? Intrigued you? Join me for part 3. We're still fizzing. The Plucky Haggis.